It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now here's your dose of cannabis science.
Welcome back, everyone, and we are really excited to get this segment started because, you know, Paxabong hit Phil, the groundhog, smoked a joint and he saw his shadow, which means we get another 6 weeks of the major media saying that pot causes schizophrenia. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure, Russ.
You know, the headlines are out there, CNN, WebMD, NPR, every little bit of alphabet soup out there on the cable channels and the news is trumpeting this headline, this study out of New South Wales. Matthew Large, I believe, was the lead researcher on this. Matthew Large of Prince of Wales Hospital in New South Wales, Australia, says, quote, "It is increasingly clear that marijuana is a cause of schizophrenia and that schizophrenia caused by cannabis starts earlier than schizophrenia with other causes," end quote. Let's have at it, Dr. Mitch. What do you think of this new study?
Alas, no. The clincher here is that there are no new data. I want to emphasize that. This is a meta-analysis, which means it takes the studies that were already out there and tries to combine them mathematically to make sense of it all. What you're not hearing in the media is that, in fact, this is probably early onset folks self-medicating. You can imagine somebody who's experiencing some symptoms of psychosis, particularly folks with less access to medical care, or folks who are already a little bit paranoid because of the disorder, and they're unwilling to go to a physician. They hear their friends are using cannabis and enjoying it. They do it too. They notice some mild improvements in their symptoms. They turn to it later when they have a psychotic break. What a surprise. They say, oh, they smoke cannabis first. That's the big issue. What burns my ass is that this same journal a month before had another article failing to replicate this CASPI data where we find folks with a special genetic risk, with a double humma-humma, and if they're heavily involved with cannabis early in life, they're more likely to develop schizophrenia. So all this malarkey about, oh, if you're a genetic risk, then you're really going to get it, isn't showing up in other data sets. The media isn't covering that in the least. The other finding in this big meta-analysis is that early onset of psychosis showed up for folks who were using drugs more generally, not just cannabis, and this makes much more sense pharmacologically. When you think about cocaine, amphetamine, and other drugs that work directly in the dopamine system, that's the system that schizophrenia is all about. And what a surprise, these folks are more likely to have an early onset. I'm concerned that the cannabis-related studies are really spurious, and they're confounded by use of amphetamine, Ritalin, Adderall, all these other stimulant drugs that people were, particularly in Australia, unwilling to fess up to, but more than willing to say that they used cannabis. We've got a big problem here. As we've seen time and again, none of us want children to have access to cannabis, and the way to get that access limited is, of course, not an underground market that never cards anybody, but a tax and regulated one, where folks who are too young to be experimenting with this and folks who have psychoses in the family can be markedly more advised and essentially educated before they even purchase the plant.
Mm. You know, Matthew Large, this researcher here, even addressed what we just discussed about the self-medication. He said, quote, "There's not so much evidence for the widely held view that those patients self-medicate with marijuana. Marijuana smoking almost always comes before psychosis, and few patients with psychosis start smoking marijuana for the first time," end quote. Is this a case then where they're just defining psychosis as their starting point at looking these people, rather than the onset of symptoms that would predate or presage the psychosis that's about to come?
That's it exactly, Russ. And as we've mentioned in the past, what often happens is they find a big record of people who've had psychotic breaks and then go back and see if they've reported cannabis earlier. But we have very poor assessments of these potential psychotic symptoms before these people used cannabis. And the few studies that do that, the measures are slightly biased against cannabis users. So I pointed out in the past, one of the big questionnaires for this, the schizotypal personality questionnaire, has an item that says, "I use words in strange and unusual ways." Well, sure, schizophrenics certainly do that. They make words up, and that's part of the way that you manifest the diagnosis. But we also have a whole subculture here where people are kicking back with the chronic at 420. Well, what a surprise. People who do that may say, I use words in strange and unusual ways. In my data set, when you drop that item out, suddenly the link between schizotypia and cannabis use disappears. I'm concerned that there are comparable problems in these other data sets.
Yeah. You know, we've reported on this subject many times because the media keeps bringing it up. You know, whenever there's a study that claims there's some sort of link, it gets blasted 186 times across cyberspace from different outlets. When there's a study that shows just the opposite, we rarely hear of it. And one of the things that we've always said in these pieces, you and I talking about this, is how worldwide the rates of schizophrenia and psychosis seem to stay stable, you know, at about 1% of the population, even if that population starts smoking a whole lot of weed, if a lot of them start smoking, or if they start smoking a lot of it, doesn't matter, it still stays the same. But one of the hypotheses they have here is that, yeah, sure, there's a certain 1% that are going to get psychosis, but these 1% are going to get it earlier, and then they'd have these extra 2 or 3 years of psychosis-free functioning that they would be losing out of because of their use of marijuana. My first thought on that is, if this were the case, wouldn't we see a lowering in the median age of psychosis onset when we have higher use of cannabis in a society?
In fact, Wayne Hall in Australia has made this same suggestion, and they have yet to detect this change in the median age of first onset. But he's suggesting that some new data are going to reveal that in the current younger cohort, this is the case. I haven't seen those data yet, and I'm a little concerned. In part, we go to so much effort now to try to identify psychosis earlier that it seems like if that is the case, it may be simply that we're better at identifying psychotic disorders than we were 20 years ago or something like that, so we have this other potential confound. And as Paul, I know, has emphasized time and again, we do have a subset of folk who really respond well to cannabis-based medicines in controlling psychotic episodes, and I think it may be a cannabidiol issue where Project CBD may be able to help us isolate who might be helped and who might not from this. And that, of course, then fits that self-medication hypothesis better. I feel like the critique of that self-medication that they offer in this meta-analysis is premature, in part because of how poorly we assess psychotic symptoms prior to anyone's cannabis use.
And bottom line on this, you know, I wrote about this as well and tried took my hand at it and had a commenter who called me out on it because I made the statement that folks that may be suffering from mental illness or feel it coming on, while a lot of them are self-medicating with cannabis, use of cannabis by people suffering mental illness shouldn't be a first resort. They should get some definite professional help on that. I'm wondering if you can help me out of the hole I've dug here and maybe explain what the actual risk is to people with a history of mental illness or who feel they may have a certain mental illness and how they should entertain the notion of using cannabis to treat themselves.
In fact, cannabis is rarely my first choice for any of the more common mental illnesses. So we've talked in before about depression, anxiety, and PTSD. With depression, cannabis may help a subset of folks. A number of my friends who are in clinical practice say that the people who are using it are having more troubles in their practice, but that may be a different subset. But my first line of defense is really sounds corny, but a kind of bibliotherapy. Educate yourself about depression. If you have a mental health center where you appreciate 12 weeks of good hard work, taking a look at your own thoughts, how you behave during the day, the way you frame the events in your life, that can last a lifetime in the treatment of depression, and then cannabis is just to enjoy. It's not something you have to lean on in order to make sure you have a happy day. With anxiety, I've done this both on Facebook to some of our friends and in repeatedly in emails and in my published work. Anxiety is one of the psychological disorders that psychology really has mastered. And if folks, again, are willing to go see a therapist for a good couple of months and really put some effort in, you can literally take tame this kind of thing and make it so anxiety is no longer debilitating, and then suddenly your cannabis again is just for fun. And the idea that cannabis is actually going to help anxiety is very dose dependent, very strain dependent, and not the most efficient way to get this. PTSD, I've just gotten those new data on that. Yes, a ton of people think that cannabis helps some of the symptoms of PTSD. I completely believe them. But compared to these exposure-based treatments, which I know are a drag, this is not going to last a lifetime the way that that kind of treatment can. And then again, cannabis is just for fun. It doesn't have to be for medication. And you're less likely to have these lingering symptoms of the emotional numbing, the distancing from your family, or these kind of freaking out experiences when you're in a big crowd. And then, what a surprise, you've basically worked hard for 3 months and kicked this disorder rather than felt like, oh, I have to lean on cannabis for this the rest of my life.